Go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's March 13th, 2008. 9:31, running a little late. We had some meetings this morning. Took the co-chair and myself away from our normal time schedule, so I apologize for the committee for starting late and the folks that have been waiting, but it's that time of year. With me today is Senator Hoffman, co-chair, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Elton, Senator Thomas, and Senator Dyson. Today we're going to bring up for the second time House Bill 289, and then we're going to go into the capital budget. We'll work until the time runs out this morning, and then we'll pick up the schedule this afternoon and continue working. And I think we're going to be here till evening today. So we will have, depending on the mood of the committee, we will have breaks from time to time. I don't want to sit in here for hours on end without, you know, a little bit of time. And then I'll also make sure that we have ample time to go to the lounge and get a bite to eat. And if there's any of the committee members, when we get into these long days, that feel that we should have a brief recess, they can certainly ask for that, and we'll accommodate the committee members. But with that, we have Senate Bill 289, Home Energy Conservation, which we heard yesterday for the first time, and we'll continue with that process today. We took public testimony yesterday. Do we have any further questions from the bill or to the bill sponsor? Do we have any final comments the bill sponsor would like to make?
No, Mr. Chairman, we don't have any additional comments.
What is the will of the committee, Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee pass out Senate Bill 289 with the individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we'll move the bill from committee with attached fiscal individual recommendations. We are now going to move on to the capital budget. And I'd just like to remind everybody to please turn off their cell phones and their Blackberries as it interferes with the mic systems. And each project that is being discussed here is a request to be added to the capital budget from the departments. So it's important that we, all the committee members, hear each item, because we spend brief moments on individual items, and some of them are fairly consequential to the state in both magnitude and dollars. I've also been asking each department to make sure that they prioritize their budgetary requests to the committee, so when we assemble the capital budget, you know, we have some assistance in the priority in which they would like to see things funded. Otherwise, the committee here will gladly prioritize your department. Is that your own peril? And with that, we have the Department of Revenue.
Morning. For the record, my name is Jerry Burnett. I'm the Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Revenue. I'd like to start, I believe, with reference number 42933, and that is the Permanent Fund Dividend Computer Replacement Project, $125,000 in Permanent Fund Dividend Funds. That is a fourth year of a cyclical PFD replacement project for desktop computers, printers, servers, and office support equipment.
Do
too many books.
The next item is 42945, which is a similar project for the Child Support Services Division. It's a total of.
If we can just, Jerry, if we can just, we'll take a brief at ease here.
Project for $194,000 was.
We're going to come back just a second here. We'll come back on the record.
Okay.
Go ahead.
On your list, the Child Support Services was first, and the Permanent Fund Dividend Division was second. And those were they're similar programs. They're just cyclical, four-year replacement cycle for office equipment and microcomputers. The other items that I have were funded out of 08 money, and they're not on this list of projects. They're IT projects.
I would suggest you start on page 3 and you walk right through it, because we got to take notes.
Okay.
Keep track of where you're at, otherwise.
The other projects on this list are Alaska Housing Finance, and then we have some IT projects, and I'm not sure how you have them in your book.
We could jump to the IT section if you want to do that.
I think it would work best if we could jump to the IT section and then go to Alaska Housing afterwards.
Mr. Chairman?
Just give us a second to slow across. Yes?
Just one quick question, if I may. On the permanent fund, that's phase 4, that's the end of that project, and it's basically wiped out then in that case, or taken care of?
No, through the chair, Senator Thomas, it would be a continuous process on a 4-year replacement cycle. So we replace a quarter of the equipment every year, ongoing. And that way everyone has a newer version of a computer all the time.
So there's a continuation, 4 years of 125. I was looking at the number. I thought it was about $500,000, and I thought that just about added up with the prior years, fiscal year 08 and fiscal year 09.
Right. It's a similar amount every year, and it would be an ongoing process.
Okay. Thank you.
And if I could go to the IT section, we have some IT projects. 45340 is a information project for the oil and gas production tax. This was discussed during the House Bill 2001 debate. In our fiscal note, it's $2,620,000 to replace the current system, which is set up for the old tax system.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
My section under IT is blank. There's nothing in there.
Should be. We'll just go. We'll take a brief at ease. If you go.
Okay, the second one is the...
Mr. Chair.
Hold it.
Okay.
On the first one, it's my recollection during the special session that the recommendation on the data system for the oil and gas production taxes, it's my recollection that during the special session, it was suggested that you were going to be buying a program off the shelf.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, we have discussed and looked at buying a custom off-the-shelf program, which then we would replace all of the programs. At the time the capital budget was put together, we hadn't done the analysis for that. To do that, it would be a cost somewhere in the $20 million range. It would be perhaps a better, more functional system when we were done, but it would be something in the $15 to $25 million range to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the second item here, 45343, is a corporate tax motor fuel system tax replacement. It's a similar type situation. We have an old system that's been cobbled together. We have a new system for our excise taxes that we've put together, and these two use a custom system to replace the corporate tax motor fuel system tax. We are at risk with the motor fuel system right now because it's not stable, and we have to report to the federal government on motor fuel tax replacement or motor fuel tax collections in order for the state to collect its federal funds for highways. So it's really quite important that we have a functional system there, and the system is not.
Senator Thomas.
You must need a quicker computer to keep up with the pace of the change of prices, I'm assuming so. Anyhow, yeah, thank you.
To the chair, to make it clear, motor fuel taxes are based on a per gallon charge, not on value. The third one is a mining tax system replacement with, you know, additional mining going on in the state, much larger amounts of money coming in on our mining, from our mining taxes. Again, this is a enhancing the in-house tax integrated tax system to include the mining, fully functional for the mining taxes. And that's $460,000 general fund. The final one is a feasibility study for $300,000 for replacing the Power Builder. Power Builder is a programming language that we've been using to build our integrated tax system, which is no longer the state standard. And so the EIB, the Enterprise Investment Board, and the department have worked together on looking at what it would take to reprogram it in a language that was standard. And go ahead.
Senator Elton.
Thank you. Jerry, are the previous three technology requests, are they Power Builder?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, they are.
So maybe you could discuss just briefly why we're going to be spending close to $4 million on Power Builder system when you're looking at a replacement for Power Builder.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, the Power Builder system is one that our programmers are familiar with. There are contractors that are familiar with and can use this, and it allows us to get to our solution more quickly using it. Newer versions of Power Builder and certain other programs are in fact compatible with a state standard program. It may be that we can write these in Power Builder and use a software solution to convert the code without having to rewrite the systems. And that's what this $300,000 would be looking at, that type of solution to that. In an ideal world, it may be better if we were in a position to spend $20 million rather than $4 million to go with a custom off-the-shelf solution. But that was not a request that we could justify at the time the capital budget was put together.
If I could ask a follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
So I guess what I'm struggling with is we're spending $4 million on an old system, and then you're going to be studying the old system, and there's a potential that the old system will be replaced. And I guess the question is, can we, on the previous three, I mean, can we keep them cobbled together until the end of the study?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, my biggest concerns are with the production tax system, because we do really have a serious need to not be manually processing the tax returns on the production tax with all the information, and especially with the new information reporting requirements that come along with it. And that's kind of what we have to do right now. And so that one, we need to have a solution in the near term in order, before we go on. And that's all our projects. And
do we have any other questions? Mr. Burnett, if you could, we'll need these ranked, of course. And I recognize we only spoke to, I think, one item before the IT.
Right.
That, but the department has a whole list of other items.
Well, the AHFC items, I believe people from Alaska Housing are here to speak to.
I would appreciate the department ranking all of the items within revenue.
Okay.
So you'll have to figure out your own pecking order.
Okay, not a
report back to the committee.
We'll do that. Thank you.
Mr. Dan Fowski.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Dan Fowski. I'm CEO of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and I'm happy to be before you today to present our capital budget. The numbers that you'll see in the projects represent a culmination of another successful year with the corporation and the earnings that we have attained, even in a slowing market, even though a healthy market, but a slowing market. We've been able to make adjustments and continue to pay out a cash dividend to the state in this relationship that's gone on a long time. With me are, of course, Les Campbell to my left, budget director for the corporation, and Brian Butcher, government affairs communications director for the corporation. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Campbell to take you through the list of projects that you have before you.
My name is Les Campbell. I'm the budget director for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The first three projects have to do with administrative function of the corporation, and the first one is the public housing software replacement, reference number 45379. It's a request for $1,250,000 of corporate receipts, and it's funds to purchase, implement, support, and provide training for a software module that will manage the corporation's public housing programs. AHFC supports public housing throughout the state of Alaska. And the current system used to facilitate this purpose was implemented over a period of between 1889 and 1994. Advances in technology have improved and excelled in the past years, and a new public housing software system is critical to support AHFC's rental housing programs. Up-to-date software will make maintenance and compliance with HUD regulations much easier for AHFC, especially with the statewide geographical challenges that we face. A secure software system that makes use of current web-based technologies is a necessity. The second project is the phone system replacement, reference number 45382. The request is for $450,000 corporate receipts, and it's funds to replace the current phone system that is now 10 years old and no longer falls under standard support. New replacement handsets are no longer available, and refurbished replacements are becoming difficult and expensive to obtain. AHFC is seeking to replace the current phone system with a reliable and supportive voice over IP telephone system. Much of the existing network system throughout the corporation infrastructure is being designed to support this voice-over technology. The corporation would realize savings in monthly in-state long-distance charges due to the phone traffic traveling across the existing leased data lines. The third project is the HR payroll implementation, reference number 45383. The request is for $387,900 of corporate receipts. And these are funds to complete the process of the new HR/payroll function for the corporation. The current system is over 15 years old and does not have the capabilities to provide the needed reports and information or capture the employee information required easily. Oftentimes, when trying to get a report, the data is unreliable. The new system will fully integrate human services, benefits administration, and payroll functions, and includes setup, training, and support are also in this request. The next group of projects here are the ones that have been in, the ongoing projects that have been in the capital budget for many years. It's number 4, housing loans program, teacher health and public safety housing, reference number 37918. The request is for $8 million of corporate receipts, and this is to supplement the corporation's popular housing programs through gap finding. These funds will allow HFC to continue current programs and expand business opportunities with programs such as the teacher housing program, the health professionals housing program, and public safety housing program. The next project is the Supplemental Housing Development Program, reference number 6323. The request is for $8 million of corporate receipts, and these funds are to supplement federal HUD funds to construct decent, safe, and sanitary housing through regional housing authorities. Funds are used to cover the development costs related to water distribution, sewer hookups, electrical distribution systems, and road constructions to project site. Also site development and energy efficiency improvements. The state law limits the use of these funds to 20% of the HUD's total development cost per unit. And these funds are prohibited from being used as administrative or any other cost to the housing authority. The next project is a low-income weatherization program. Reference number 6332. The request is for $2 million in federal receipts, $6 million in corporate receipts. And this program utilizes federal Department of Energy and corporate funds to assist low and moderate income families to attain decent, safe, and affordable housing through the weatherization and rehabilitation of existing homes. Weatherization provides for fire safety through furnace and electrical repairs. It provides education, chimney and wood stove repairs, egress windows, and others.
How does this program or this request consideration fit into the bill that we just passed from committee?
It's the same program. The bill that was just passed expands the program a little bit beyond what this one did. This one was geared to the low income specifically, and I think the bill spreads that out to low and moderate income.
Right, so is this still required if the bill passes with the substantially bigger funding numbers that we're looking at?
I would say if the money that's in the supplemental bill is passed, then this probably would not be required other than to utilize the federal receipts on this. Number 7 is the Senior Citizens Housing Development Fund, reference number 6334, the request for $6 million of corporate receipts. These funds are for grants to municipalities and public or private nonprofit corporations in conjunction with other agencies for the development of senior citizen housing. Funds can be used for the purchase of building sites, the site preparation, materials, construction, and rehabilitation of existing housing. organizations qualified to apply include municipalities and public and private nonprofit organizations. Additional components include smaller grants up to $25,000 for nonprofit senior organizations to pay for preparations and plans and project feasibility studies, appraisal, site preparation, and other pre-development activities. Number 8 is the HUD Federal Home Grant Program, reference number 6347. The request is for $750,000 in corporate receipts as a match to the $3,375,000 of federal receipts. And the purpose of this program is to expand the supply of affordable, low, and moderate income housing and to strengthen the ability of the state to design and implement strategies to achieve an adequate supply of safe energy efficient and affordable housing. The program has funded 44 rental projects containing 818 units so far, has rehabilitated 373 low-income houses, and it has assisted another 315 low-income households to purchase homes.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes, go ahead.
Les, you have a number that's different than, I'm just curious. You said 375, here it's 3,450,000 in federal receipts. I want to make sure that which one's correct.
I've got here 3,450.
450, and you just quoted 3,375,000. So, I apologize
for that. It is the other number, and the difference between the 3 million is the federal receipts coming from Washington, D.C. The other amounts are program receipts coming within the program that are returned to the corporation.
We won't hold you to the verbiage of one of the guys who speak in the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
07 and 08 were 3375.
We'll have a brief Eddies. Can continue with.
I just wanted to note too that that we passed out these books that have these capital projects in them, and those projects that I just covered have additional information beyond what what I've discussed, and also have some pictures of some of the projects that have been completed in the past. The next project, number 9, is the HUD Capital Fund Program. Reference number is 6342. A request for $3,200,000 of federal receipts. And these are funds that provide public housing authorities with funds each year to help renovate and modernize public housing units. The annual CFP, including replacement housing factor, last year was approximately 2.7. The current request is intended to cover the spending authority only required for the amount of funds anticipated next year, including any other incentives that may be available for a public housing authority. Number 10 is the federal and other competitive grants. Reference number 6348. A request of $1,500,000 of corporate receipts and $3 million of federal receipts. And the purpose of this program is to allow HSC to apply for HUD and other federal agency and private foundation grants that target the housing needs and supportive services of low-income and special needs groups, such as senior citizens, the mentally and physically or developmentally disabled, or the homeless. HSC will also apply for energy-related grants as they relate to housing. And when required, HSC will provide the needed matching funds. Some of the funds receive will be passed through to local nonprofit sub-grantee organizations that deliver housing and or the services. Number 11 is the competitive grants for public housing. Reference number 6350. The request is for $250,000 of corporate receipts as a match to $750,000 in federal receipts. And this program is similar to the prior project, only it's directed towards the public housing rental units. The purpose of this program is to allow HFC to apply for HUD or other federal agency or private foundation grants that target the housing needs of low-income and special needs groups that are in the public housing. And again, HFC will apply for grants to prevent crime and substance abuse in public housing and assist public housing families attain an economic self-sufficiency. When it's required, HFC will provide the needed match. The next project is the Energy Efficiency Monitoring Research, reference number 6351. The request is for $1 million of corporate receipts, and these funds utilize are used for a designated grant to Cold Climate Housing Research Center to conduct housing construction research analysis and information dissemination among the housing industry and the public. Data gathering and analysis is being continually related to energy efficiency technologies for homes constructed in northern building market conditions. Number 13, State Energy Program or SEP Special Projects, reference number 32526. The request is for $30,000 in corporate receipts as a match to $150,000 in federal receipts. And these are Federal Department of Energy funds with the corporate match for the special projects, SEP special projects, such as building technology, codes and standards, wind power technologies, renewable energy source, or renewable energy for remote areas, or transportation technologies. This will allow us to apply for grants when they're made available through DOA or DOE. Number 14 is the statewide project improvements. Reference number 40068. The request is for $2,500,000 of corporate receipts. And the funds are to provide repairs for deferred maintenance and improvements to HFC-owned properties throughout the state. The project will allow HFC to keep pace with the deterioration of existing components of the rental properties such as roofs, sidewalks, and common areas. It will enhance operations and allow a quick response to ordinance and code changes. The primary function of the fund is to address major or extraordinary work items identified annually through the physical needs assessment by the public housing maintenance staff or the asset supervisors. Number 15 is a Denali Commission project. Reference number 41531. The request is $7 million of federal funds. And these are to utilize federal funds to administer the Commission's housing programs. These funds will allow AHSC to administer current programs designated for rural areas of Alaska. The Denali Commission's goal is to provide decent, affordable housing for seniors and teachers in rural Alaska. Lack of housing has forced seniors to relocate to other communities where appropriate housing with necessary support is available. Lack of decent rural housing for teachers have been cited by school administrators as one of the factors that contribute to the inability to attract and maintain a teaching corps. The United States Congress has responded to this issue and set funding aside through the Denali Commission. Number 16, Lusac Manor renovation, phase two, reference number 43076. The request is for $2,336,000 of corporate receipts. And these funds utilize corporate receipts to replace the housing and following approval of last year of funding to replace the underground utilities and infrastructure for the entire complex. Following completion of a professional site assessment that included cost estimates to renovate or replace the existing structures, it has been determined that it is not economically feasible to renovate the structures, but to replace them. This funding would replace all the structures under a phase plan that would utilize the existing foundations.
Touch on that again on the phasing of it. I see it's a multi-year constant dollar.
Yeah, we phase this one using about the same amount of money each year for a four to 5 year period. I think it's on a 4 year period to replace all of the units in the project. There's currently 62 units there, and this would begin that phase of moving people out of the buildings and knocking them down all the way down and rebuilding those units.
And how old are the units?
The units were built
65.
In 1965, yeah. And there's 21 total multifamily residential buildings.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I might, we're also considering with this and working with our board and, of course, with you folks. That property sits on a very valuable piece of property, and there's been some discussion as to maybe even expand our presence there with going up even higher and possibly some commercial activity. Not that we're into the commercial, but to even build more units. With the downturn and the HUD and the lack of production going on for years, and mainly the voucher system and the requiring need, we want to maximize the use of that piece of property. If you're familiar with Anchorage, it sits down near the Sullivan Arena, and we think we can expand it. We would like to even consider in the future not only just low income but a mixed income community because of the need for good housing or affordable housing for workers in the downtown Anchorage area, which is becoming very, very difficult to accommodate. So this is going to be an interesting project that we're going to keep your apprised of as we go along. To maximize use of that piece of property.
Okay.
Chairman?
Yes, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there are 21 multifamily buildings, but how many apartments are there again? Did I hear you said 60-something?
There's 62 units in total. Two of those units are currently being used for a daycare facility, so there's 60 units in that project.
Okay, thank you.
Number 17 is the prison housing. The reference number 43079. The request is for $1 million of statutory designated funds for a statewide correction facilities slash prisoner housing projects. Following identification of a building site and evaluation of the cost to provide the necessary infrastructure and utilities to the proposed Mat-Su prison site, it was determined that the construction budget allowed under SB 65 was not sufficient to absorb the additional cost that the Mat-Su borough was unable to cover. The Department of Corrections has revised their approach and identified a strategy to expand existing facilities at various locations around the state and reduce the size of the proposed Mat-Su facility. AHFC is currently assisting corrections with the initial planning and the new strategy through a limited RSA and anticipates the need for additional spending authority to continue to provide planning and construction management services to the Department of Corrections.
Can you elaborate a little bit on where the regional locations are going to be and how that's going to be handled?
Brian, why?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Brian Butcher, Public Affairs Director for AHFC. We are kind of on hold at this point. We've received very little information from the Department of Corrections other than what you folks have. And this is, if things do progress, we would be able to receive funds from the Mat-Su Borough to continue with the construction management. If we knew definitively that the prison wasn't going to happen, these wouldn't be needed. So these are just kind of here in case we're needed.
And have you been requested by DOC to assist in other jails that are being contemplated, such as Kodiak, Fairbanks, or Bethel?
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Because we've heard word that they are having financial difficulties because of the cost escalation costs since SB 65 passed, which I was a co-sponsor.
Senator Hoffman, we have had some conversations, and I know we're anticipating some more through staff of DOC that have contacted our office, especially our construction arm, where we had a contract in place where we were offering technical expertise and assistance to the borough and to DOC. As of today, we've been requested. The idea was we were approached on in a couple conversations I was not a part of, but staff were, that would we be interested in possibly helping on some of these smaller prisons. But, and I'm not trying to be vague, we just don't have a whole lot of information at this point. But the question was posed. Our attitude is, if called upon to help and we can offer some assistance, we'd like to do that. And allowing it up to the commissioner to come in and kind of lay the plan out. I've also flew down the other day with Mr. Duffy, the manager, the manager of the Mat-Su Borough, and he and I had a discussion similar to asking each other questions if we knew any more details of what was going on, and both of us were anxious to talk further.
Thank you. Next project.
The next project.
Wait, Senator Elton.
I want to make sure that I understand this. So the RSA would be from the borough to AHFC?
If, go ahead.
No, the RSA currently is between Department of Corrections and AHFC.
Okay.
And the way it's in place right now.
Okay. Have you ever done work like this for other state agencies?
If I may, Senator Elton, we built the dorms for Avtech, and we had an arrangement through another agency to do in Seward. Some of the purchases we've done, the Atwood building, the parking garage, we've had some relationships, maybe not totally like this, but similar. What this really allowed us to do was we wanted to make sure this project was unique in that the Mat-Su Borough was going to be the issuer of the bonds, and that working through DOC, so you had Department of Corrections, Mat-Su Borough involved, AHFC. And so what this was the ability for us to receive funds either through the borough or through DOC to get reimbursed for our expenses in offering professional assistance. So it is unique, but yet we were not going to be the issuer of the debt. We were going to assist the Mat-Su Borough in the issuance of debt by offering advice and counsel at their request. So I hope I'm answering your question.
I think so. If I could follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So why is this a capital request from you rather than from the Department of Corrections?
It's related to whatever happens with Department of Corrections, but it allows us to receive the funds or participate in those funds. If it progresses, that's why there's statutory designated project funding on this. If there's nothing that comes up from it or we're not asked to participate, then we would not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Elton. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm getting a little concerned about correction projects here, because as I recall, last year there were multi-millions of dollars vetoed that were for these sorts of things, for startup and planning of prisons. And now we're back asking for money for startup, for planning for prisons and evaluation statewide. And in the meantime, as you mentioned earlier, we got the clock ticking and inflation is happening, and we may be pricing ourselves out of the business just because of, I don't know, for lack of benign neglect that appears in the planning process to get prison off the ground. That's not your fault, but I just seen here's suddenly $1 million for you to do something where there was money in the budget last year for that activity.
There was money in, and I think we put in $30 million and clearly didn't need the $30 million, so it was vetoed down to $2 million. But $2 million, if we do a project, still would not be enough to complete the project. So
right. That's
why this additional million would add to that $2 million.
And the incoherency of what we're doing here confuses me. And I'm just concerned that it's something that, whether we like it or not, we have to do. It's expensive, and it's getting much more expensive because of what appears to be some confusion, benign neglect. I'm not sure what the right phraseology is, but I just say that for the record.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Any further questions on this request? Senator Elton.
Mr. Chair, I tend to agree with Senator Huggins. I mean, what we have here is a request to receive funds from an agency that isn't requesting funds to do the work. And I guess I don't understand it.
If I may on that, and to Senator Huggins and Elton Hoffman, we're just being proactive. In the sense that negotiations a while back were that HFC's role in this could continue. So when we prepared this budget in November and submitted it, December 15th, we wanted to have a line item in there that allowed us to receive funds so that we could offer some assistance if this project were to go forward. And that's kind of where we end on it in terms of what other agencies are doing, what the negotiations are. So we just wanted to make sure we had a placeholder so that if we were called upon, we could react and be of some assistance. And that's what this represents.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Senator Thomas.
Just one short question is, as you assist them in their planning, DOC that is, I don't know how you feel about it, but I ask frequently about using existing facilities, because the design for projects seems to be so much anymore. 10% is an easy number, maybe more depending on the complexity of a particular structure. So I just add that as a thought that, you know, I don't know, you can go and buy plans from somebody, you got to pay for them, obviously they're not just going to give them to you, but if somebody evaluated with as many prisons as we have in the United States and many in northern areas and in Canada even, that are state-of-the-art, some new, that might be at least worth a look at something that could be save you 8 or 7 or 8% of the 10% of the design cost if you could just actually purchase something like that. I don't know if that's practical or not, but I just.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I know in our negotiations and the work that we did, which was fairly extensive last year with the department, I believe one of the engineering groups was RISE, and then there was and I forget the acronym of the prison professionals, DL. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
Similar discussions were ongoing, and I know they had designs. I know that there was discussions to scale it back, and the very same questions that you had or what you've raised were discussed as to, I know that there were tours that people took of similar prisons in different parts of the country to get a similar design, so.
Oh, okay.
I've about extended, reached the maximum of the knowledge that I have on this subject matter.
And Mr. Chairman, the $30 million that was put in last year was put in as we transitioned from one administration to the other. there was the mega prison that was going to be built, and the way the process had been set up was that the borough would be paying us, and as construction manager, we would then be, it would be being passed along. And so that's what the $30 million was for. The current administration decided to put the brakes on it. That's why it got vetoed down to $2 million. Last fall, as some of you remember in LBNA, the corrections commissioner came up and said, the process is continuing. They're looking at a smaller, new prison, Point McKenzie, as well as an expansion of a few regional ones. That's why at that point we included this, these funds. If it doesn't go forward, it would just be empty receipt authority.
Any other questions on the, I think you're still on the prison when I left?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. I want you boys getting ahead of me too far now.
The next group of projects are related to the rental units that AHFC owns. Number 18 is the Chugach View siding and window replacement. The reference number is 45385, and it's a request for $2,500,000 of federal receipts. And this will utilize funds to follow up on renovation work completed several years ago. There were insufficient funds to address the exterior issues, such as the windows and siding during the interior renovation. This project would replace all existing siding with new material that would seal and protect the underlying structure from the harsh climate. The existing wood frame windows would be replaced at the same time with energy efficient windows that would require little maintenance and be easier to operate for elderly and disabled tenants. This housing unit is a 120 unit senior facility.
So are you looking at double pane low E vinyl or triple pane, or do you guys have a standard upgrade window concept you use around the state?
I'm not sure. I think we do have a standard that we go with. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm pretty sure that it would be vinyl windows, either double or triple E. There'd be the energy efficiency efficient windows while we're doing the project.
Mr. Chairman, I can get you the specs. I know that they'll have in our on the public housing construction side as to what the RFP will be, that when it goes out for the specs on those windows, and I can get you that information very soon.
Appreciate the offer, but it's, I guess I'm glad to rank my priorities. It wouldn't rank that high, so we will pass on that offer.
Okay. Number 19, Edelin Heights roofing replacement, reference number 45386, request for $500,000 of corporate receipts. And this uses corporate funds to replace the metal roofing on all the buildings in the corporate-owned Market Family Housing, which is 32 units in Wrangell. The roofing was originally installed in 1981 and is now 26 years old, and it continues to leak despite regular repairs. Based on the age and condition of the roofing materials, complete replacement is necessary to ensure the protection of substrate structure and interior finishes from further damage that will occur as a result of moisture intrusion. Number 20 is the Edelin Heights mechanical replacement, reference number 45386. The request is for $450,000 of corporate receipts to upgrade the heating systems at the Wrangell Family Housing properties. The project will facilitate the conversion of the existing oil-fired boiler systems at both the corporate-owned and the Market Family Housing. The corporate-owned Market Family Housing and the low-rent units, a total of 52 units in Wrangell, to a cost-effective heating system powered by the local hydroelectric grid, which is less expensive to operate and maintain than the current fuel oil heating systems. The next project, 21, statewide energy improvements, reference number 45384. A request for $500,000 of corporate receipts to address specific recommendations suggested in the required energy audits performed throughout the state. The energy audits are conducted at regular intervals as required by HUD to monitor the energy efficiency of public housing. The audits identify specific improvements that can be made to the housing to reduce energy consumption. This request is to address those specific recommendations that are done by the energy audits this past year.
I think the reference on that one should have actually been 45388.
Yes.
Sorry again, Les, but 45384 is Bethel.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Thomas.
Could you step back real quick, if you would just explain to me on the Edelin Heights mechanical replacement. When you do that, is this a replacement of the boiler with an electric unit that heats water and uses the same system there, or is it a replacement of the entire system where the heating tubing or the heating units in the individual rooms would be replaced, meaning that the electrical would have to be expanded as well?
It would do away with the oil-fired burner, the hot water baseboard, and go in and be replaced with electrical units to do the heating. It would not run through a central system, but each one would be electric and run, be heated that way. Similar to what it was back in the 70s, 80s, we've gone through a complete cycle where it was too expensive to heat with electricity in the past, and so we converted to oil or gas, and now it's going back the other way, that the oil's too expensive, and they have the hydroelectric project down there, and it's cheaper to heat with electricity now, so we're moving back to where we were years ago.
And it's cheaper to heat with electricity, I understand, but still to replace the entire distribution rather than heat water and circulate it with electrical versus oil? Is that part of the, I'm sure when it was, it said it was evaluated, so I'm assuming somebody did do that, but it just seems to me that with the new electrical boilers, for lack of a better term, with the storage, et cetera, that they have now, that somebody might have found that it is actually economical to just replace the boiler and still use the hot water systems that exist because they retain heat much longer than electrical system. Once it goes off, the thermostat turns it off. Yeah, there's no residual.
Yeah, I'm not sure there. The Alaska Engineering and Energy Consultants, or EEC, I guess they did the energy audit and made the recommendations, and I haven't read that just from what was given to me. But I'll take that back and ask the construction department about that.
I'd be curious. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Thomas. Please proceed.
The next project is number 22, statewide ADA improvements, reference number 45389. The request is for $500,000 of corporate receipts, and the purpose is to address the recommendations suggested in the recent ADA audit. The project outcome would be to begin addressing the recommendations suggested in the audit to maintain federal funding by complying with HUD. It would increase the comfort of tenants and increase the unit rentability. It would be a phased, I guess this, even though it doesn't say phase one, this would be probably a phased, because $500,000 would not totally address all the recommendations. That this would begin that. Number 23 is Bethel Community Room and Shop, reference number 45384. The request is for $2 million of corporate receipts for a new community room in Bethel. This project combines the need to replace the existing office and shop and provide a community space for the 117 units of family housing at Bethel Heights, located in Bethel. An existing design that has been previously constructed for AHFC properties, such as in Kodiak, Sitka, and Juneau, that design will be used. That includes a shop area, community room, and supporting offices.
What, can you define the shop area? What's shop area?
The shop area would be where the maintenance would have their maintenance tools and whatever inventory they would use and do whatever they need in their shop area relating to the maintenance of the units themselves.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The next group of projects are in.
If I may, before you move on, I'm expecting that in rural areas, that is more of a common occurrence, is to have those maintenance shops associated with those types of facilities so that people don't have to travel and bring a lot of stuff with them. I'm assuming that's the case, that when you do housing in rural areas like that?
We try to put the shop or maintenance facilities within the grounds, yes, so that less time and make it more efficient for the maintenance crew.
Thank you.
The next set of projects are in the mental health bill. The first one is the homeless assistance program. The reference number is 6359. The request is for $1 million of corporate receipts, $500,000 of mental health trust authority receipts, and $500,000 of general funds mental health. And these funds are for grants to local communities and agencies to help develop programs to prevent homelessness by providing assistance to families in imminent danger of becoming homeless or those who are currently homeless. These funds will be combined together into one and administered by AHFC. The second project, beneficiary and special needs housing, reference number 6360. The request is $1,750,000 of corporate receipts to provide funds for Alaskan nonprofit service providers and housing developers to increase housing opportunities to Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries and other special needs populations throughout Alaska. The program has developed 118 units since FY 2000. In FY 2008, 18 units were funded for persons with severe mental illness and developmental disabilities. The project outcomes are to add 16 congregate housing units for people with mental illness, developmental disabilities, to reduce recidivism amongst clients spending time in institution, to use for supportive housing, including assisted living, for people with mental, physical, or developmental disabilities or multiple disorders, and to use as transitional housing with support services for newly recovered alcoholics and addicts. The next project is emergency assistance grants for mental health trust beneficiaries, reference number 43318. The request is for $200,000 of mental health trust authority receipts. And these funds are for grants to support beneficiaries to the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority to prevent loss of housing that might occur due to unforeseen events such as institutionalization. It will allow beneficiaries to maintain homeownership or long-term rental stability by providing gap or short-term assistance. Assistance may be provided for any event, like a structural or major appliance breakdown, that may go beyond the financial reach of the homeowner, or the life event that may threaten the ability of the beneficiary to make a mortgage or rent payment. Funding under this program is intended to supplement, not supplant, existing resources available for home modifications, weatherization, or rehabilitation programs. And the final project on here is the housing trust. The reference number 45390. The request is for $2,500,000 of mental health trust authority receipts, $2,500,000 of general fund mental health, $2,500,000 of statutory designated receipts, $2,500,000 of corporate receipts. And the purpose is to create a trust that would assist programs that provide housing for the homeless and prevent homelessness and create long-term affordable housing. The outcomes of this trust would be a reduction in the number of homeless persons that interact with social service systems, a reduction in the public cost of emergency and institutional services, that treat the homeless, an expansion of the community-based mental health system, and a strong evaluation component is included in the budget to ensure program accountability and measure performance.
So was that item your lowest priority?
It came at the end of the book, but every time we're asked what our priority is they all the programs have equal priority, but we've listed them in this order.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have a backup in our books for that last project.
There's no backup in the book, so we'll double check that.
On the trust?
Trust, the last item.
Okay. But that's currently, if, Mr. Chair, if I may, that's currently coming at you through SB Senate Bill 231 is the enabling legislation, and that's, I think, at Senate Finance.
Yeah, we've had one hearing in the committee.
One hearing, so. But you need
Senate Finance Committee sometimes kind of a peculiar group of guys, so. I would highly suggest you do prioritize your list. There will be some budgetary adjustments coming, and we'll be more than glad to do that for you. Our other departments, it's preferred that the department does it themselves, and I think there's been discussion here several times that it's actually a requirement that these items within the different departments and their budget, both operating and capital, are prioritized.
If I may, we will do that, Mr. Chairman, and get back to you soon.
Any other questions for the? Well, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jump out of sequence and maybe hit Department of Ed. We'll make a brief at ease while we get our books in order. back on the record. We've got with us Department of Ed, who enthusiastically only wants to build one school, and talk to them about that. It's a little inside joke. Anyway, if you could introduce yourself for the record and then speak to the component parts of your request.
Mr. Chair, can we just make a brief announcement that the open caucus scheduled for 11 will probably be delayed for 10 or 15 minutes.
So we'll go here till 10 after. Give us 20 minutes, and if we can get done earlier, because you guys should be pretty straightforward.
Yeah, for the record, my name is Mark Lewis. I'm the Admin Services Director for the Department of Education. The first item that we have on the list, reference number is 45623, and it's the Mount Edgecombe High School deferred maintenance for $1,914,000. Originally, this was funded through Alaska Student Loan Corporation bonds, but I believe it's been switched to the Alaska Capital Investment Funds or miscellaneous earnings. Just as a quick history, in 2007, we updated our six-year CIP master plan for Mount Edgecombe, and these items were mentioned in the facility audit. This is to deal with some certain deferred maintenance items of the 24,100 square foot Mount Edgecombe High School classroom building listed as number 1330 in the capital improvement plan master plan. It was originally constructed in 1988. This funding will be used to address the roof assembly, which has reached its life expectancy and the gutters have rusted through. It's for roofing, flashings, gutters, downspouts, interior floor, wall finishes, ceiling tiles. There's an issue with the boiler system. Right now it's fed from boilers that are about a quarter mile away, and what we want to do there is to add in two electric boilers on site to assist in the efficiency there. We have some ventilation issues in the administration area and the original mechanical room, and they'll be upgraded due to overheating. Electronic digital controls will be expanded to serve the entire building, and existing fluorescent lighting fixtures will be replaced with more efficient lamps. Telephone data lines and racks will be installed in enclosed and dedicated rooms. Damaged toilet compartments and chalkboards, whiteboards will be replaced, and all counters and cabinets that have reached their expected life will be replaced.
I think what we'll do to try to abbreviate some of the stuff, because you guys do rank your major maintenance, and it's online and priority order. We'll respect that, as we have in the past, and decide the amount of funding that goes into it, and allow you to either shorten the list or lengthen it. And same with the new school construction. I think your department is a good example of how the department should come before us with ranked items and priorities. So that, but I do have a question. The ranked items in major maintenance appear to be different than the list in front of us. So the list in front of us is in some kind of a non-ranked random order.
Mr. Chairman, what we do is we differentiate really between the two things that we have in the budget. We have the three items before you, which are the Mount Edgecombe High School, the Alaska State Library facilities planning and design, and the post-secondary database. Those are like department internal issues, so we've ranked those 1, 2, 3, and then the ranking for the school construction and the major maintenance stands on its own through the process that they go through. So. That is how the ranking order is for those particular items.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the current status of the Casale case? It seems as though you're ignoring that whole issue with this capital budget.
Through the chair, Eddie Jeans, Director of School Finance. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the Casale case, the judge issued their decision. But then there was some additional work to be done on the trust fund. That is still pending. And so what the department is doing is continuing to follow the CIP process where districts submit applications. We prioritize those applications on the major maintenance and capital or school construction list, and those are what are presented before the legislature.
Okay.
Yeah, and I understand that, but not one school that would have addressed the Casile case has been submitted before the legislature by the administration. And I was wondering, why do you feel that there's no need to address those schools at this time?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, since the Casile case was the decision was issued, the legislature has funded numerous projects statewide throughout rural Alaska through various funding mechanisms, as you're well aware, through the grant process, through state geo bonds. The department continues to follow the process that was established in 1994 of the prioritization process. So the schools that have the most need in the state rise to the top of that list.
I understand that, and I think the department does an excellent job, and the number of schools that have been constructed have been primarily initiated by the legislature, and I'm wondering why the administration isn't initiating and coming forward for the construction of more of those projects. That is the question that I'm asking.
For those, just for clarity, those watching at home, as of December 17th, and I think that's still a current ranking, December 17th. Matsu Borough, Susitna Valley High School is number one. It was initially in the budget submission by the governor. And then items 21 down on the list into an organized area is item 21 in Anchorage East High. So there's quite a listing in the ranking of need from 2 through virtually 20, mostly dealing with Lower Yukon, Lower Kuskokwim, one in Hyder, which is southeast Kukesh country. But anyway, the subject has come up, so I'm just kind of curious if the department had submitted in their original budgetary request to the administration construction of more than one school or no schools, or do you take a position, or how does that interaction work between you and the group that compiles the submission?
Thank you for clarifying that question. Mr. Chairman, what the department does is we go through our process of creating the priority list, as you're well aware. Then what we do is we submit both lists to the governor's, to the Office of Management and Budget, and we request $100 million a year to address the facility needs around the state. And then we work with the Office of Management and Budget in determining how that will be allocated between the two lists.
So it's $100 million total?
Mr. Chairman, that's been the department's standing request for at least the last 10 years.
It just helps and helps the committee members, and we work on trying to decide what to do, what the department, how the department handles that. Senator Hoffman.
And under that time frame, how many years will it take to go through the major maintenance and the construction priority list?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. That's a tricky question to answer, because you may remember a couple of years ago.
The current list that we have before us.
I believe there is about $600 million.
$645 million, $645 million, and $344 million.
So you're looking at close to 10 years.
I think as 2 years ago, didn't we do, I want to say $350 million and took out the entire major maintenance list,
right,
which caught a lot of people by surprise. And then there was quite a wave of interest in getting on the major maintenance list. And the major maintenance list now sits at six. 344. So we have a similar size major maintenance list that was facing the committee three years ago, just for historical buy-ins. Do we want to, the will of the committee, do we want to walk through each of the recommended major maintenance projects, or would the committee, when we do the capital budget, just concentrate on the number, and we just slide it up and down.
Yep.
Let's do that.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd also like to suggest that the committee work off the November 5th CIP listing. We did go through a reconsideration process. The Schoenbar Middle School in Ketchikan, there was a settlement in a lawsuit, so that reduced the state's need. And then there was another project, I think it's Kowak, number 14. It won't be on your list because it's new. Their time frame that they had submitted originally, the department thought it was a FY010 project, and so we denied it to being on the list. Through the reconsideration process, we discovered that they had typed in the wrong year on their application.
So, Mr. Jean, you want us to use the November 5th ranking?
Yes, please.
And the November 5th ranking on schools looks like we'd have to go down clear to number 11 for a change, which would be an aggregate amount of 364 million, or roughly 300 million. So probably won't make a difference on that list, but you want us to pay attention to both November 5th list on both major maintenance and new construction?
Mr. Chairman, the only changes were on the major maintenance list. The construction list remained the same. So in considering major maintenance projects, I would request that you use a November 5th listing.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Going down to number 11 would be a good start on the construction list.
$105 oil, if it hangs out there, you'd be surprised what we'll get built over the next few years.
109,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think, is there any other questions for Department of Ed? We're gonna recess. Until 2:30, looks like. We'll come back at 2:30, and we'll continue on. I think the university's up next, and we'll work right on down through the list. That we're in recess. Recess and ready to go. We could have representation from the university. Ms. Pat Pitney come forward. I think she's in the audience. I want to mention, Ms. Pitney, in case case the university hasn't, which it doesn't appear to be in my book, to have you rank your capital projects requests in a numeric order in case, not in case, we're going to be changing the capital requests from what was initially offered in the bill, so we have a better feel for what is, you know, the most important for the university on down, so we can make sure we get your priorities addressed first.
Fantastic. For the record, my name is Pat Pitney, University of Alaska Budget and Planning. With me today is John Pugh. Can answer some additional questions on the Juno projects, and if I missed something in particular.
Southeast campuses?
Southeast Correct. Campuses, exactly.
So if we do BRUs, we can put him in charge of the entire campus structure, is that correct?
I suppose it would work that way.
Can we have him in charge of the Anchorage BRU also?
Yeah. Please continue.
Our priorities are actually quite easy. The Board of Regents is very clear about their priorities, and the major R&R is the board's number one priority. That's a $50 million annual need. The second priority is the BIOS facility. The third priority is the nursing facility. After that is backlog on R&R. So in terms of priority projects, the maintaining existing facilities is the board's first and foremost priority, and has been for the last 20 years. The governor's budget includes a $40 million for maintaining existing facilities and for major R&R. That's most of the region's first priority, $50 million. Within that, there's allocations for each campus.
I think the governor's requested submission for review by the committee was that. Currently, I don't think it's in the budget. So all these requests are being requested for consideration to the Finance Committee.
Note taken, yes. It was in the original governor's budget. It's not in the CS that we're looking at. Right. I'm working with the document I believe that you have in front of you. Mm-hmm. Has the list down. Through there. So starting at the top, reference number 45326, that's the appropriation, that's the $40 million general fund, $1 million university receipt funding. The first allocation within that is the statewide annual R&R, and that's for data center upgrades. The next one down is the 45644. That's the University of Alaska and Tenino Valley campus, major R&R priorities. A little bit, I'll go into a couple of global statements about the university's major R&R. This has been the board's top priority. On average, over the last 10 years, the board's requested $70 million in major R&R facilities as its first priority, capital priority. $50 million, it's split into two chunks this year, $50 million and $70 million. But the $50 million is given the university's 400 buildings, 6.7 million gross square feet of facilities, plus the infrastructure around those, electrical, sewer, et cetera. $50 million is the annual capital need for major projects. In addition to what the $50 million on major capital priorities, the board mandates every campus dedicate a minimum 1.5% of facility value to its maintenance funding. So $27 million annually from our operating budget goes into facilities maintenance. The difference between facilities maintenance, the day-to-day type stuff, and the major R&R is day-to-day it's fixing the window latch. It's patching the roof, it's fixing the pipe that's leaking. The major R&R is when you fix the pipe four times and you're risking a major leak, you go in and replace the pipe. That's the major R&R. Or the funds get big and you're replacing plenty of R&R. It's also where you've gone and you replace the heating system that's 25 years old, or you replace the roof that you fixed 14 times to keep it from leaking. So the difference between the two is we've dedicated every year and consistently that day-to-day maintenance. Our facilities look good, they work well, but the half of the 400 buildings are more than 30 years old. That's where the major R&R is, comes from, or is needed for. Over the last 10 years, the average appropriation for major R&R has been just over $12 million. At an annual need of somewhere between 40 and 50, we've accrued more than $300 million in additional major renewal and replacement project backlog. Okay. Right now, the university's major R&R backlog sets at just over $700 million. Those are identified projects, so listed out. This roof, that roof, the Tanana Valley campus siding, the Tanana Valley campus roof, the Paul Building roof in Ketchikan. Project by project, $700 million total in project inventory. What $50 million does is keeps us even. Okay, it keeps that level from growing. What $50 million plus the $70 million does is brings that deferred maintenance backlog or the R&R inventory down to something in the $300 to $400 million range, which given our facility size, this is about as low as you'd ever want to, what you would ever expect to get to. So coming into then the campus by campus basis. Okay, every campus has a project inventory, and that's listed in the red book. I won't go into it because what you have in these priorities are the campus priorities that would fit within a $50 million annual need. The other piece is when this request is being put together, we're looking at it as a long-term strategy, that there's funding, consistent and adequate funding every year for facilities R&R as the top priority. So with that background, then we can go down the rest of the pieces. And with us online and in the room are our facility experts. So if there's a particular project question out there on, tell me what you're going to do in this particular building and, its age or whatever, that they can answer those specific questions.
Can we back up just one page to page 3 and the $1.5 million at reference number ends in 648. I know we went over that, but it was, I think, pretty quick. And
right. There
isn't a lot of items on your list, so we want to give due consideration to all of them.
Okay. So that one is the 500,000 for the data center upgrade and the million? No. Nope.
Statewide annual renewal renovation requirement, $1.5
million.
Page number 3. Second item on the list.
This one right here.
45648 is the code number.
Capital renewal renovation requirement for that.
Oh, right. And that's a statewide annual capital R&R requirement. Yeah, I was on the same one. That particular project is an upgrade for our Butrovich Data Center, our Office of Information Technology. It houses all of our administrative computer systems, all the servers that hold the information on finance, human resources, all of our student informations are housed within the Butrovich building. The data center was built 18 years ago. The need for cooling, the need to be able to shift the computers and put different servers in and out is the requirement. The $1 million receipt authority is, in addition to housing our administrative computers, it also houses the Arctic Region supercomputer. And so it's the share of that renovation between those two projects is the $1.5 million. So the second, or so the next one down, is the allocation for the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Tanana Valley campus. The way the distribution of the $50 million is based on average age of facilities and the amount of facilities in a particular campus or set of campuses. So Fairbanks campus has obviously the most facilities, and they're also the oldest facilities. There's a document in the Red Book, we won't go into it, but if anybody is interested, has a list, the inventory of all the number of buildings, the average age of all the buildings for the campuses. So the distribution among campuses, with the exception this year of the Juneau campus Anderson facility, where we're ready to execute that full project, is based on this distribution of space and age. And there are more needs on this list for all campuses than what can be accommodated with both the $50 million and a $70 million appropriation. So the $50 million, again, is an annual appropriation, looking for that to continue at some consistent, adequate level so that there can be planning and sequencing of projects in the future. So the Fairbanks campus projects, there's four priorities that would begin being addressed with the $19 million. Those include the main sewer line, the Arctic Health Research Building to renovate some additional labs to put more research in there, and the TVC Barnett envelope. And there was one. I'm missing one that was their fourth priority, but it would fit those projects. Okay, now, if you actually add up these projects, they total more than the $19 million. So they can't do all of these three projects on this list, but they would do those pieces that they can in that year, save the rest of the project for the appropriation in the next year. The next one is...
On that...
Senator Hoffman.
The Arctic Health Research renewal, you say this is 2 of 4. How much was number one phase, and what are the costs for number 3 and 4 phases for that Arctic Health Research building?
I'll ask Mark Wolfork, should be on the phone. He can answer that particular question, I believe. Mark, are you on?
His last name again?
Wolfforth.
Wolfforth. Wolfford, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. The first phase of Arctic Health, which we are completing this month, was a $5.7 million appropriation 2 years ago. Phases 3 and 4, phase 3 is approximately $7 to $8 million, and phase 4 will be approximately $25 to $30 million.
And what is the time frame for the university's request for phases 3 and 4?
Phase 3 and 4 is scheduled for, or phase 3 is scheduled for fiscal year 11, and phase 4 is scheduled for fiscal year 13.
Could you please state your name and your who you represent for the record, please?
My name is Mark Wolford, W-O-H-L-F-O-R-D, and I'm a senior project manager at University of Alaska Fairbanks.
So that one project's a little in excess of $70 million in repairs.
Correct.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You don't need to answer at the table if there's nobody here that can answer the question, but I'd like to know at some point in the near future how part of the project explanation is fisheries research performed in the building is specifically connected to Alaskan coastal and Bering Sea regions, provides managers and fishermen significant information about the health and population of many harvested species. I'd like to know how you make a management decision on what work occurs in this building and what work occurs in the new Juneau Fisheries Lab that has the synergies of being right next door to the NOAA lab.
We can answer that.
Okay, thank you.
Who would you like to answer that? There's a list on the line, or do you want to get back to them?
I think it would be best to get back.
That's fine. Get back to the committee on that answer.
Okay, the next project is or we mentioned before, was the Tanana Valley Barnett exterior envelope, and this is the old universe, or the old courthouse in Fairbanks, and step by step, the university has renovated this building. This is the next stage of that renovation, and again, at the current level in 19, would not complete this full this particular phase of the renovation.
Mr. Chairman, where does that show up in the Red Book?
That shows up. Page
40, right?
Page 40 is the narrative. On page 34 is the listing of projects for Fairbanks, UAF Fairbanks priorities.
And these are listed in this list, they're listed in order of priority?
Page 34 is listed in priority order. And again, there's critical pieces of the main sewer line that would be done, you know, first, pieces of Arctic Health, pieces of Barnett, the critical electrical distribution. There are a few pieces that would have to be done in the first year of that. So among those first four priorities, this money would be used. There would still be needed pieces of those projects that would come out of funding from the next year.
And what was on the Barnett exterior, how much was in phase one, and what would be phase three?
Through the chair, if we could ask Mark Wolford to answer that as well.
Wolford, could you, Mark, could you answer that question, please?
I can. Through the chair, the first phase of TVC Barnett was $4 million appropriation 2 years ago, and that funding is being used right now on a project to renovate electrical and mechanical systems. Phase three is scheduled for fiscal year 11, $14 million, to take care of additional R&R requests and programmatic needs for the Tanana Valley campus.
A little over $36 million.
In the end, yes, sir, it'll be a little over $36 million in the end.
Pat, you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, when you look at this list, how do you, you know, I understand what you're saying as far as you've got them prioritized by your breakdown of geographic area, but how do you prioritize between your different areas? For instance, if we wanted to fund your top 10 as a hypothetical example, how would we know what your top 10 priorities are on 34, 35, and page 33?
In the process that, to do that for the $50 million versus $40 million, we put together a straw man among the campuses and said, okay, here's where we think it is. One of the key projects, like last year, the Bethel campus project was a full project ready to be executed. That one we didn't want to break up into small pieces. So this year we have a project like that. It's the Anderson facility. So Anderson is on the top of our R&R list in terms of if we were prioritizing among all of these projects. But the fact is each campus has several urgent projects. So even if there was a smaller amount of money, we would want each unit to have some funding to address its most critical R&R priorities. So we would do Anderson and some pro rata amount down to where the money is so small it's not worth it, and then we would shift out of some areas into others. I would say that among the highest are, I mean, we could provide actual, among these pieces, we could provide a fairly prioritized list at different dollar amounts. Unfortunately, $40 million doesn't get past the first three or four priorities of any campus. Doesn't even get into the third or fourth priority in most campuses.
Unless we did UAS Southeast, we could probably do all of them. Senator Hoffman.
And then you mentioned the Kuskokwim campus last year. How much was that appropriation for that renovation?
That was $4 million. And the second priority after the Northwest campus critical deferred renewal was the campus code and R&R for another $5 million.
And the Kuskokwim campus renovation wasn't funded last year, correct?
It was funded. There was $8.5 million of the $44 or $45 million request. There was $8.5 million in R&R funded. The Kuskokwim campus renewal was first. The Anchorage roofs were second. And the planning for the Anderson facility renewal was third. So we're on reference number 45645. So the top priority for the UAF community campuses outside of Fairbanks is the Northwest Campus Critical Deferred Renewal. That project currently is estimated at $3.5 million. This first $677,000 would go to planning and picking up the critical pieces of it, and then the next tranche would probably come in as a full project for this particular item to finish it out, to go to bid.
So how far do you go down the list, Mr. Chairman? How far do you go down the list with this appropriation?
Excuse me?
How far do you go down the list with this appropriation on page 34?
It goes a quarter of the way into the first project.
So this project, we go a quarter of the way in. Do we go a quarter of the way into any of the other first projects, or are they all funded fully? The first project of the Fairbanks and the Anchorage projects?
They are in this particular year, but last year they were not. None of them were.
And why, if I might continue, why is it that the community campuses, they don't even rank to fund the first one fully? I think that goes to the chairman's question about if these were all ranked together, where would they fall?
If you, going back to the distribution by age.
I know it's hard to see the Northwest campus and the Kuskokwim campus and the Chuck Cheese campuses from Fairbanks, but I think we need to look a little further down the road.
Through the chair, if I can just note that looking at the number of buildings, the average age, and a distribution of $50 million, that's the amount. When we're ready to execute the full project, that would come in as a full project amount like the Anderson facility. It's in at 10.2, although the distribution based on age and amount of gross square feet wouldn't fit that.
So of the $80 million that's being requested, or the $100 million that's being requested here, we're going to be able to see $677,000 for community campuses, primarily in the far reaches of Alaska.
Under a $40 million scenario, it's $677,000. Under a $120 million scenario.
The grand total on the second page is $114 million.
Exactly, but under a $40 million scenario, only the top one or two priorities are addressed. The pages on 34 add up to $700 million. That's our entire deferred maintenance list. We expect to do that over several years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Reference number 646 is the Anderson renovation. And for this particular project, given it's been on our R&R priority list for nearly 10 years, in fact, probably more than 10 years now, it was on the priority list when we first requested the Lena Point facility. It is fully ready to be renovated. We're changing the use of this facility from the fisheries, School of Fisheries Research Facility to the primary science facility for the University of Alaska Juneau Southeast Campus.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, and I appreciate the fact that on this project and the previous project that Pat has noted the word this is on the priority list. I just a couple of comments and then a question. I'd like to know if this has been there forever, and if we had done this when we were supposed to do it, there'd be $10 million available for other projects this year. But I'm going back to page one in my book, which is reference code number 45326, the first one that we did. And I feel compelled to ask about some of the language. You say that this level allows appropriate flexibility to adjust the scope of work. And then also note that, you know, with FY09 funding and complete projects with future funding, I see that as kind of wishy language and giving the university flexibility to once again begin phasing a project that has been phased for a long period of time. And I guess I'm looking for some kind of assurance that that's not going to happen again with the number one priority on maintenance.
The Anderson facility is in full represented in this number, and the Anderson facility has been planned. It's ready to execute. We want the Anderson facility done. We don't want to do it in pieces and parts.
Okay. So when you
this is put there is for where Fairbanks has $19 million and its first four priorities are all critical, but they add up to $30 million.
So when
there needs to be some flexibility to work among those four priorities to get the most out of that funding, with the expectation there's future funding.
So when you use language like adjust the scope of work, you're not talking about the Anderson building?
We are not talking about the Anderson.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, this is Chancellor John Pugh from University of Alaska Southeast. And in fact, this was an issue when this category of $50 million was cut back by the then governor's budget at $40 million. And there actually was a process that we went through with the president's cabinet to ensure that the Anderson building remained at the full amount, and other areas the scope would be cut back. And that was agreed to by all the chancellors and the president and vice presidents, that was the fact that in this year, particularly given the number of years, this was a project that had been attached to the Lena Point project because fisheries moving out and all their research faculty and so on, and redoing that building, which is over 30 years old, was attached to that at one time. And the board, as well as all of the president's cabinet, have agreed that this is something that has been on the plate for 10 years, and it is one that's ready to go and needs to be funded.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
So if we gave you an appropriation of $70 million, would the allocation be the same as presented here?
The allocation would be based on the building and square footage. Juneau would have the 10-2, which exceeds about 3 years worth of things, but all other areas would increase from there. And in fact, I think Juneau has actually, in terms of backlog, under the $50 million scenario plus the $70 million, the 120, Juneau, for instance, would receive another $3 million. Anchorage would receive an additional $15 million for the backlog. So the distribution would follow that same distribution proportion across campus, with the exception is when there is a full project that needs to be done, there might be some movement, but under the 50 and the 70, those are shown on the back of the tab operating capital. So on page 30, under the $50 million scenario plus the $70 million scenario, it shows what the allocations would be.
Pat, how, you know, everybody's always interested in have a peculiar attention to the areas they are that they represent. And I see the area that I represent, Ketchikan and Sitka, have two items on there, and then there's a, another little item for a handful of money. The whole thing comes to 5.7 million. How long do we have to wait? Does Mr. Pugh next to you have to wait for his turn in the food chain when all these big dollar amounts that you guys talk about up north get taken care of?
If you look in, if you look at the past appropriations, the Ketchikan facility has been almost completely refurbished on the list this year that to be covered under this scenario is the Paul Building roof. The Sitka facility has priorities, but I think I would ask Keith Gerken under under John Pugh if he might.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I could answer the one. The Sitka priority comes under the 70 million and would be funded when you mentioned the 70 million. If that was covered, if the 70 million was added, the Sitka addition would be included in that 70 million. So the 50 and the 70 get all of those community campus priorities that are in there. And Sitka is a part of that $70 million piece. And the Paul Building is part of the original $50 million. The roof is a critical coverage there.
So at $65 million, I might be out of luck. At $70 million, I got her in there. I got it. Please continue.
Just a little bargaining chip.
Not going there. Not going there. Okay. Let's see. We are on the Anchorage annual renewal and replacement, 6-4.
Well, 647 was the community campus, but we just
Did we cover that?
We covered that pretty much.
The Paul Building is roof is the top priority that completes pretty much a full renovation of the Ketchikan projects, and then the Sitka project would come under the $70 million. Let's see. Now we're on the Anchorage campus R&R, reference number 642. So the Anchorage priorities continues to be roofs, fire alarm panel upgrades, the gas extraction system at the Merrill Field, which is a property that the university has acquired. It was built on a trash dump and needs to have the gas extracted prior to being able to pave that particular parking lot and get full use out of the facility that's adjacent to it. And then lastly is the HVAC upgrades. Chris Terlides is online if there are particular project questions. Again, the amount of money that is covered under the $40 million and under the $50 million can address most of these priorities, but not all of them, or not all of them in full. And again, these are just the top four priorities of the Anchorage campus. If you look on page 33, we've listed about 20 plus the additional needs coming down. They show a list, current inventory list of $139 million total. So this just addresses the first few priorities within their campus priorities.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know when I was on the board, we had criteria, and I'm sure they haven't changed much, but we always looked at the age of the building. And that's what you're saying, the Fairbanks campus, the older buildings, obviously. The nature of the problem, whether it was life safety, that type of thing. Then the sewer and water systems, obviously, involved with that. And then the cost of letting a problem go, too. Is that still kind of at least some of the criteria that are generally used when you're evaluating projects? Just to
yeah, very closely. And I think the other one we put in there is program usefulness. So if the building isn't serving the program, then that puts it also on the priority list. But the ones you spoke to are the same ones in the urgency? At what point do you need to do this so it doesn't cost you a lot of money? The life safety, through our M&R, if it's a life safety issue, fix it or close it. And so sometimes the campuses have to use their maintenance funds to address a safety issue, to shore it up or close it. We just will not stand for safety issue. The R&R funding is not consistent enough to wait for addressing a safety issue. Get it done.
Okay. That's what I thought. I was hoping that was still the case. Thank you.
Questions on the Anchorage projects? The community campus projects, Anchorage Community Campus projects, reference number 643. There's two pieces, two primary pieces to this, to the priorities on the community campuses. And first is the fire system upgrades. Most the fire systems in the buildings are the ones that are of an age that there's no replacement parts. Those are the ones that they're focusing on upgrading. They work just fine, but they're old enough that there's not a replacement piece, so planning to replace the full structure before any failures is the appropriate thing to do. The second piece is a cable plant renewal, and this supports our distance ed delivery. Right now, the cable plant doesn't support the level of bandwidth and technology that's required for some of our distance ed courses or the distance ed delivery that we would like to do. And so this priority builds up that cable plant and also will allow the voice over IP for those community campuses in the future. So if you moved into the $70 million level for those community campuses, there's the Prince William Sound Wellness Center, the Matsu Lab Renewal, Kodiak Campus Renewal, and Matsu HVAC Boiler Replacement. But within the $40 million level, those are the top two priorities that would fit.
Okay. Pat, while we're mentioning some of the technology issues, in the process now is to get fiber optics strung through southeast outside of Juneau, hitting Sitka campus and Community Sitka, Community Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, and even Angoon. Some of those towns, the university has substantial interest in mainly Ketchikan and Sitka. Are you going to be in need of some capital to capital upgrades to ensure you can maximize the bandwidth capacity that's going to be available on those campuses?
I'm going to turn that one over to John or to Keith Gerken, and if either of them can address it, if not, we'll get back.
And just maybe give us a one-minute blast because it's not on our list.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that our campuses, when we renewed, for example, Ketchikan and of course Sitka, is fairly new, that our cable capabilities within those campuses are fine, and we are looking forward to the new bandwidth coming in, and we will be able to connect. Sitka and Ketchikan both do a tremendous amount of distance delivery, and 30% of our head count in Southeast is for distance delivered coursework that we do. So it's very important. But right now, from my understanding, from our folks, that we're ready to hook up when it comes in. But I will get back to you quickly with that if there's any difference in what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that's coming into the fall, so we'll probably something we'll be looking at in a year from now. But I just wanted to take the opportunity to mention it. Yeah, please continue, Pat.
So that completes the R&R projects. I think it's important to note that under the $50 million scenario, 8 years out, in fiscal year 2016, our deferred maintenance, if we receive $50 million annually between now and 2016 for major R&R, our deferred maintenance or our R&R level would be roughly what it is today. Under 40 million, it would be in the 850 to 900 million level. Under the last 10-year average of just under 13 million annually, it would predict an R&R level of $1.2 billion. I think the biggest thing is adequate and consistent R&R funding. We've had questions asked, well, why should the university be treated differently than other state facilities? And this is a state issue, and we're not asking to be treated differently. We believe it's an issue for the entire state to have adequate R&R funding. The next area is planning, design, capital project receipt authority. It's a university receipt authority for $20 million. What this does is provides the university the ability to go out and find funding from other entities. Given its university receipt, it's a mostly private foundation type things, and maybe a corporation wants us to do some training. They would upgrade a particular building for us. We do a major fundraising campaign. This allows us, if there were $2 or $3 million, to do a capital project, to accept that funding and execute the work. Past projects that we've used this for has been more on the federal side. The Tanana Valley campus building, they had a floor renovated with Denali Commission funds to build a dental lab. That was $1.5 million. There's been many projects in the smaller campuses using federal Title III money that it's been $1 to $2 or $3 million to renovate a particular piece of the building to handle a program for student success or a classroom upgrade or distance ed upgrades. So this is authority to hustle that funds, and if it's received, it gives us the ability to do a short turnaround on a particular project.
Can you clear up just for census? This request is an estimation of the potential receipt authority needed from 09-014. Mm-hmm. Why was 09-014 versus 09-010?
We were looking at a six-year horizon, and then we don't have to put it on our list again. It sets out there a capital appropriation lasts for 5 years unless we ask for it to be renewed. We don't know. We don't have any particular projects in mind at this point. It just allows us to have that there. So if there is an opportunity to use that authority rather than coming back for $1 million authority, in May somebody is working with a donor and they have $1 million, they want us to want to support nursing delivery in Dillingham, for instance. Mm-hmm. It would allow us to execute that project.
If we were to modify that number, so we chop it in half or chop it by 3/4, wouldn't that still leave you the ability then to go to LB&A or come back in January, February and add a little bit more versus tying up the receipts of 20?
Right. If given it's the revenue, we don't have revenue in hand that requires this authority at this point. Mm-hmm. We may have an opportunity in May, June, July. 20 million is what we would expect over the course of 5 years. Mm-hmm. If that dropped to 5, if it dropped to 10, it still provides us that flexibility if something were to come about. Mm-hmm. LB&A is another option. It's just from a standpoint of timing.
Right, okay.
The next item is the Small Business Development Center. This has always been in the capital budget. There is a move in the House to move this to the operating budget. The university is fine with this in the capital budget or in the operating budget. As long as there's funding to back it in the operating budget, a move to the operating budget would get this off of the capital budget and place it as it's the base operating funds for the small business development centers. It really is more appropriately in the operating budget, but has traditionally always been funded in the capital budget. So
why isn't this item like at the top of your list here to ensure that it's an ongoing funding, and especially with a smaller amount relative to the rest of the request, if these are ranked in numeric order of priority?
Yeah, it's because it's kind of, it's such a traditional capital appropriation that it's very important. There's a huge advocacy. It's one of those, it's almost like a non-priority. It's a must.
Mm-hmm. Well, this year might be a little different. You may want to consider changing the order if we, mm-hmm. and we're going to look at all of the different departments, and we're asking all the departments to rank their capital request by priority, so we they know their departments better than we do when we start changing these lowering their requested amount, total requested amount, to the committee.
We'll take that under, I mean, it will be number one priority at that point then. The operating funding, the base operating funding for the Small Business Development Center is critical. Okay. The next item is the UAA Student Housing Phase 2. Previous appropriations, we've received receipt authority. It's not sufficient for all of the receipt authority. In addition to the receipt authority, to actually execute the UAA Housing Phase 2 would require additional state funding, general fund or other state funding. The housing fees cover the bond payments on a housing structure. The housing fees cannot fund the full amount that would be required to build the facility. So this is the rest of the non-general fund piece, but it must have a general fund or a state appropriation piece for it to go forward. In terms of the budget priorities within the board, this is down below the BIOS facility, below the health sciences facility, below Small Business Development Center. It's in additional capital needs, I think is how it's worded. We have the priority capital needs, which is R&R, BIOS, health sciences facility, Small Business Development Center, and the renewal of the backlog, and then additional needs. The student housing is additional needs.
You help the committee with the ongoing struggle we always have, not only with the university but other departments. Here we've got, you know, quite a building spree the last decade and infrastructure improvements to the university, which I think is all well and good. And then we have the potential challenge we have in front of us of deferred maintenance as we build this infrastructure, these buildings, ongoing maintenance. And now we have a substantial maintenance request in front of us, and then we have a BIOS request that's, you know, in the piles of millions. How do we, you know, if there's not enough money to go around, how do we try to decide, do we go build a BIOS and not do your maintenance, or do we do your maintenance and not do your BIOS? Or
the Board of Regents' priorities are clear. Maintaining our existing facilities is the first and foremost priority. The reality is the leverage capacity of university research is significant. $6 of external funding, $6 or $7 of external funding to state dollars from the operating standpoint. However, to get that is very space dependent, and we're doing 4 times the level of research and 1.4 times the space that we were in the early 1990s. We are maxed out on space. So to make that next step in research requires that investment. But the clarity of of priority of the board is R&R first.
And can you give us a 1 minute refresher on bonding if we went down that route to consider a bond for some of these larger items, if we're looking at a $100 million building or other sizable capital infrastructure improvements?
A general obligation bond for the new facilities is perfectly acceptable from the university standpoint. Being able to revenue bond and use university operating sources is not doable because you have to have the revenue in hand, not in hand, but you have to know that the facility will generate that level of revenue to make those bond commitments. And there's, for the BIOS facility at a $113 million facility, there's not the revenue to cover a revenue bond payment other than if it were general funded bond payments, then a revenue bond would work fine.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On this student housing project, you have 7.9 in university receipts. In the Red Book, it says that there's a need for 9.72 million for general funds for a total of 78.62 million. Where is the other 9,720,000 in the budget?
Could you give us a page number, please?
Page 45, in the Red Book, page 45.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the 9,720,000
yes.
is not in a budget, and therefore, even if we receive the receipt authority at 7.9 million, without the 9.7 million in state funds, we could not proceed with the project.
Very good planning.
And the.
There's
the 145 million that's you want to touch on that one, the last one though.
The last one is the Alaska Regional Research Vessel Additional Receipt Authority. About 5 years ago, there was federal receipt authority of $80 million for the Alaska Research Vessel. As the project has matured, it's a fully funded federal project. It does require, at the time of completion, dock facilities and Seward for its docking, but it'll be some time before the ship is complete. But the price of the ship now is at $125 million. So this is the remainder of the federal receipt authority to cover the construction of the Arctic the research vessel. This is an NSF project, and the School of Fisheries is the lead contract person on the ship.
Can you give us a little quick burst on where it would be located and when these docks would be built and where the money is going to come from and the ongoing operational cost after the boat's in place, when the ship's in place?
I'll start with the easy ones, and then we'll get to the harder ones. And actually, if Mark Wolforth is on the line still, he may be able to help me out on this. The construction of the ship is, they're in the process of design and not to bid. There are federal timing issues and so forth that it could be another year or two before the ship actually goes to bid. Once it goes to bid, my understanding is three years to operations. The plan is it would be docked at the Seward facility. The School of Fisheries has a research facility at Seward, and it also is connected to the road, another advantage. There is a request in our budget for dock and marine center facilities, $20 million. That is our estimation of what it would require to have it moored. That's in this particular request. Again, it'll be some time before we actually get the ship on board. The ongoing operating costs of the ship will be primarily federal and or private research funds. This is a ship that the University of Alaska operates and maintains, but it is used by the scientific community nationwide. So they contract to use the ship. There's a price that's put on it each day that they use the ship. There's an overhead to do the maintenance and so forth of the ship. So the operating costs will be externally funded operating costs, not a state-funded item.
Why wouldn't that ship be located in Juneau with the NOAA facility here and in the, Mr. DePue here, his lively campus? We can make it a little more lively.
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, I'm not clear on the decision to have it in Seward, except that, in fact, they feel like in terms of getting to most of the research work that the ship has, that they presently have, is in the Bering Sea, and it is a much shorter trip to the Bering Sea from Seward than it is from Juneau, and I think that's part of the major decision in docking at Seward. There is, I think, a decision looking at Kodiak and Seward, because Kodiak would be another area that would be close to the Bering Sea, and my understanding within the school fisheries is they made the determination to have it in Seward, where they have a research facility there as well, of course, as their FITC facility there in Kodiak. But there was a look at both Kodiak and at Seward, and the decision was made to in Seward. But the main reason was the time that it gets to go out to the Bering Sea area, and then a wintering area. Seward is a good wintering area. Juneau obviously would be a good wintering area also, but again, as far as operations during the time that they're using it primarily in the summer months, it would be cheaper to have it closer to the areas that they're researching.
Mr. Chairman, Mark Wolford may have some clarity on some of these issues as well.
But Senator Olson, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How far out does this agreement go with the National Science Foundation and their federal, I guess, the use and the federal funds that are coming in for this ship's use, the research related to it?
I don't know those details. I could get back with you. Just if the last ship we ran until it quit running and then sold
to the lifespan of the ship.
Lifespan of the ship was the agreement on the last ship. I don't know that that's the case, but I would believe it's close to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Maybe you can get back to the committee on the history of the last ship and just to kind of spin us up, because some of us aren't as familiar with this issue as others.
Right.
Senator Elton.
Thank you. And Pat, I mean, because it is going to be chartered by other entities, probably especially the federal government and federal government researchers. And is there any way to accomplish the dock facilities and the cost of the dock facilities in a revenue bond and then recapture from the contracts the dollars that are needed to pay off the revenue bond?
I don't believe that would be the case, given that the fees are set around what it costs to operate the ship, and the other research vessels they would be competing with may not have that, but I can look into more that possibility. The dock situation, regardless of where it is at, will have to be worked out in the next couple of years.
Okay, and then Mr.
Go ahead, but I've got another comment. Are you, is it a different question or
something? Different question.
Let me just ask this right, and then you can do your follow-up. There's numerous docks around, well, even in Juneau, for instance, that lay dormant in the winter. That would be another reason to, when the university, unless they're casting concrete where they're going to locate this ship, there's a lot of piers that lay empty in the winter, and I would assume that the university would be more interested in going in the Bering Sea in the summer than the winter. So that, there might be some work there. And then Senator, will follow, Dyson will follow Elton.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think that's a good point. How much are we spending now on charter vessels? Is the university chartering a vessel? My understanding is you've got a converted crab fishing vessel that you charter. I mean, I'm assuming those costs go away with the arrival of the new vessel.
It would be associated with a research grant, but I can find out what type of a charge it is and what ships that they're currently using. Okay. I think it's similar to what you're saying, a crab ship, but given it's associated with the cost of a grant or built into the grants, it's not something that we're funding outside of the research.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dyson, you had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question, I think, is along the line of yours. I assume that there are federal rules that would keep this vessel from using surplus Coast Guard or NOAA docking moorage positions or National Marine Fisheries or even State Ferries positions. At least I'd like to know that if somebody looked at those possibilities. And
I do know, especially between Seward and Kodiak, all options have been looked at, but we'll get back with a full history of those and any of the constraints that are put on it from a federal standpoint.
And if you need room to expand your School of Fisheries, we have Sheldon Jackson College. That can be talked about sometime in the future. I think there's a home and it needs something to live in it. I think that was your last item.
That is our last item that's on the list. The Board of Regents budget has a few other items on page 29. The health sciences facility is one that we hadn't mentioned as an Anchorage facility, is among the top priorities of the board.
Okay. So we'll take a look at those. Clearly, there's nothing hard and fast on the submission from the governor to the administration to the table here. So we'll take a quick review of that on our own time. But Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My only comment is that I think that campuses, other than the Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau campuses are doing fairly well in the capital budget, but the other campuses, rural campuses that provide a lot of the credit hours, from review of this, I would say are being ignored drastically.
We could work on that, Mr. Chairman, when we forward,
which isn't unusual.
With that, we're going to take a short recess because I've got to get a schedule out for next week, and I'm going to go do that with my staff, which will only take a handful of minutes, and then we'll come back and continue on. Public safety is up next, so we can prepare our books. Until then, we'll stand at ease.
We're having a public hearing.
$70 million for one project.
Come on in. Go back on record. Department of Public Safety wants to come forward and make some requests for consideration in the capital budget, and they have enthusiastically joined us. As soon as the chairman gets his paperwork in order, we'll head down that road. If you can please introduce yourself and who you represent, and then we have several projects under consideration, and if you could walk through the project request, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dan Spencer, the Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Public Safety. We also have online, as well as in the room, other folks in case there are questions that I can't answer. Mr. Chairman, I have delivered to staff prior to this afternoon's meeting a revised priority list that takes into account all of the projects, IT projects that were in a different section of the bill, which we'll talk about here. So I hope you have that with you or available to you. Mr. Chairman, the first project on the Department of Public Safety's list is the Anchorage Aircraft Hangar Replacement. That is a $3 million project. It's reference number 40007. And I believe Deputy Commissioner Glass is online and would like to talk briefly about that project.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. For the record, my name is John Glass, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Public Safety. In 1972, when the Department of Public Safety took over the wildlife enforcement within the state, we were given the present hangar located at Lake Hood. That hangar was built in 1948 and has been used since that time. In 2006, the prior administrator for the aircraft section had called OSHA, and OSHA came over and inspected our operation at Lake Hood. Since that time, OSHA has issued a warning to us that if we go into our storage facility at Lake Hood, that we are subject to a $3,500 per incident fine for that hood, or for that storage facility. Basically, they have put the red tag on it, told us not to use it, not to go in there. And recently, in the end of February of this year, the municipality of Anchorage has issued us a letter of finding that our two buildings that we have been using for office space, which consists of two ATCO trailers that have no plumbing either for bathroom facilities or water facilities, are temporary buildings and they are in violation of the municipal code. In working through the mayor's office here in Anchorage, I have been able to get them to give us a one-year moratorium on taking care of removing those buildings from use. And they say that they will do that based on the fact that we have this request in for a high priority, our number one priority on our capital budget request for a new hangar, and they are requesting that we issue them a plan for replacement of the facility. Our request would like to have a 200 by 150 foot hangar built on the present building space. We would like to keep the old hangar as a storage space for any seized aircraft that wildlife troopers do, and also as a storage for any equipment that would be used in the new facility.
Well, I thought you just say a minute ago that it was red tagged and you couldn't go in it?
No, that is a Quonset hut was built in 1947 is what we have been using for storage, and the Quonset hut has been deadlined or red tagged.
Mr. Chairman, what the facility is, it's got a hangar, a small hangar that has some working areas in the back, and we've actually had to add a second floor with some timbers in, or some 2x4 construction on the inside for some internal storage. On the outside, it has two ATCO trailers. I think it's two ATCO trailers that we bought some years ago to provide some administrative space. Then we had this old Quonset hut that was providing parts storage space, and another small outbuilding there is providing parts storage space. And the Quonset hut, the floor is literally falling in, and that's the thing that was red tagged. The whole facility is in need of repair. I mean, we've had to, when OSHA came in, we had some things that we had to take care of. A lot of the internal work, because of lack of maintenance funding, has been done by mechanics, and so they're working with code issues and all kinds of other things. The facility is just old, and it's way past its prime.
Thank you. Next item.
Mr. Chairman, the next item on the list is reference number 6121, Aircraft and Vessel Repair and Maintenance, for $1 million. Mr. Chairman, this is an annual request made by the Department of Public Safety. We have I think it's 41 aircraft. We have a number of vessels, and it takes money to keep these things going. What we're talking about here are just regular repairs and maintenance for both on aircraft, such as your 200-hour checks or your 400-hour checks. You have, you know, if we ding one when we land, same thing with vessels, although they're not, don't have the same mandated, government-mandated intervals for repair and maintenance. You still have the regular issues with corrosion. You have situations where they get damaged, and so this is to keep our fleets going. And Mr. Chairman, I might add that on this and several other projects here, there are in the backup that was provided to you some examples of projects that were what we were looking at the time the request was prepared, but circumstances change over the course of the year. You may become aware of some issues that we weren't aware of at that time, such as corrosion or something, and so our priorities will change during the course of the year. Mr. Chairman, the next item on the list is law enforcement equipment, ASD law enforcement equipment for $500,000, reference number 37774. That is very similar to the vessel repair and maintenance in that we have a lot of equipment. We use it a lot. It wears out, things like radar, things like computers, things like digital cameras for out there on crime scenes, and snow machines, four-wheelers that we have to have. We use those for search and rescues. We use them for regular enforcement purposes, and this is just to be able to help us keep replenishing this equipment as time goes by so that we're able to respond and do our jobs. The next item, Mr. Chairman, is facilities deferred maintenance and repairs. That is for $1,715,000. And Mr. Chairman, there is an allocation, a variety of allocations below this, and I will skim down through here. They add up to the total amount of the appropriation. The first two are noteworthy in that they both refer point back to the aircraft hangar. The first allocation are there for $91,700 is aircraft section structural repairs, hot water tank replacement, floor drainage improvements, and the second item is aircraft hangar design. The we're still in there, and until we have another project, another hangar around, we still have to keep that facility in some kind of habitable shape for the folks that are in there, and that's where the structural repairs and whatnot come. To the extent that we could, obviously, we would not get carried away with a bunch of repairs there, but we think we have to have those in the near term. As far as the Anchorage aircraft hangar design for $75,000, which is the next allocation, the $3 million in the original project talked about by the deputy commissioner was construction, estimated construction funds. When we were putting our two projects together, we had the design broken out separately. Not quite sure how either the governor or the legislature wished to approach those particular projects. So if it was the committee were interested, we could certainly combine the design and the construction funding, and that would not be a problem. Or we could have it separately.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at this idea of having a new hangar out there, obviously one of the concerns has to do with the land and where are you planning on putting the hangar, because land around the airport is a pretty high, pretty premium commodity, and I was wondering where you're going to be able to put that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the intent is to use our existing land that we have right there. We have enough room there to go ahead and do that, is my understanding. And the deputy commissioner could possibly add more to that if you need more information.
Mr. Glass, if you're going to be putting in a 200 by 150 hangar, I'm assuming it's fairly high. What are the, is there room on the in the space for it?
Senator Olson, through the chair, yes, sir, there is. We will be removing the existing ATCO trailers as well as the condemned Quonset hut, and that will allow space to build that on that existing property that we have there.
I guess even, Mr. Chairman, if I can continue, even more concerning has to do with dealing with a master plan for the Anchorage International Airport. Have you gotten those approvals as well for this so that you're fitting within their plan?
We have not talked to Senator Olson through the chair. We have not talked to the airport directly, but that piece of property happens to belong to the Department of Public Safety. It does not belong to the airport.
Mr. Chairman, just so I'm clear that they're in building around an airport, you've got to make sure it's below a certain amount of height because you're dealing with IFR aircraft that are on missed approach and those kind of things. But I think one of the concerns that I have is that if this hangar goes up, what are the plans long-term for maybe taking over some more hangar space down at the Coolis site?
Senator Olson, through the chair, that is a possibility. However, we have 22 Super Cub aircraft. Most of those during the summer are placed on floats, and we would still need hangar space at Lake Hood itself to handle our float-equipped aircraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the next item on the list is crime lab facility repair and improvements, including a security system upgrade and fuel storage tank replacement, and most of that funding would be to take care of a 20,000-gallon fuel storage tank. As you know, we have a proposal in to build a new crime lab, but that is several years down the road on the best-case scenario, and we still have to keep the existing one alive and well while we're doing that. The next allocation, Mr. Chairman, is Bethel office repair and renovation. That would include some wiring, insulation, some energy-efficient windows, refurbishment, a security system at the Trooper Post. The next item, Mr. Chairman, is the Dillingham office foundation repair and renovation and underground storage tank removal. And that allocation is $96,000, and that's what those funds would be directed at. The next item, Mr. Chairman, is the Fairbanks State Trooper Post repair and renovation for $520,000, and that includes a variety of things, including heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, water heater replacement, ceiling and light replacement, and evidence and cold storage construction. The next item, Mr. Chairman, will be the Ketchikan Trooper Office deferred maintenance, including roof replacement, water line repair and maintenance. That's for $65,000. And Mr. Chairman, as you may recall, we acquired that facility, I think it was 3 years ago. There were some issues that we dealt with at the time we acquired it, but the roof has always been a problematic issue, and it does need to be repaired and replaced. The next item allocation is for $383,958, and I'm happy we could be so precise in our dollar amount on this particular one. This is for rural trooper office and housing repairs. And as you know, we have a lot of facilities out in the rural areas. They are expensive. I think the last general facilities maintenance appropriation that we got was 2 years ago for $1.1 million. We were just about out of money there. Just about anything we do in the rural facilities is expensive, particularly if it's something that has to be taken care of immediately in the middle of winter, where you have plumbing freeze up or you have a boiler go out or those things, and you have to fly someone in some cases from Anchorage, fly in parts, and it is simply expensive. We have, in the backup we provided to you, we listed a number of specific projects. On the other hand, if situation changes in different facilities and they become a higher priority, we would reallocate amongst as necessary. The next allocation, Mr. Chairman, is SICA Training Academy repair and renovation for $50,000, and that would include heating control upgrades. We have, SICA facility's been around for a long time, and we have regular maintenance needs, and that is residential facility a good part of the year, as we have recruits, both state trooper recruits, municipal police recruits, VPSO recruits, all living in the facility while they're training. And the last allocation under the deferred maintenance and repair is Soldotna Trooper Post Facility Deferred Maintenance and Repair for $199,880, and that would include things like fire alarm panel upgrades so we can meet fire codes, upgrade some of our ventilation in the building, do some patch and seal on the parking lot, do a fence and provide a secure impound area at that facility, and take care of some compressor and ventilation fans in our evidence room. With that, Mr. Chairman, if there are no questions, I'll move on to the next appropriation, which is for Alaska Wildlife Trooper law enforcement equipment replacement, and that is $475,000. That is very similar to the Alaska State Troopers. It is the equipment we need to keep doing our job. It's cameras, it's computers, it's four-wheelers, it's snow machines, it's all of those things that get worn out when we're out there patrolling.
and responding to crime scenes. And again, we've provided an estimate in the backup of how we would allocate it today. That can change during the course of the year as the situation changes. The next item is Alaska State Trooper Mobile Data Computers for $480,000. And this has several companion projects, related projects, which we'll talk about a little bit later on, Mr. Chairman. But basically, the intent is to start getting away from doing everything on paper with all of the attendant issues of storage of your paper, of having some trooper come in and turn in reports or turn in citations, and they have to be manually re-entered into another system, sometimes into more than one system. And to put mobile data computers in our vehicles, on our patrol, and get it to where we can do some of this stuff automated. You do your ticket online, it prints out, everything's all ready to go, you get back to the post, you dump the information into there, it goes into this our central computer, and there's some other IT projects coming up here that will take that, and the focus is sharing that information, getting it in a uniform system. And we think this would be an excellent investment to make us more efficient and down the road.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Dyson.
As I remembered, another spinoff from that system was enable the officer to know if there was, he pulls up to a resident, if there's somebody there that's on parole, and if there's foster children there in the home, and those sorts of things. Am I right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dyson, you might be. I'm not certain of that, but we have Colonel Holloway from the state troopers here.
He could just nod or... Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dyson. Does this appropriation also include training?
Mr. Chairman, I am not certain of that. No.
And where would that be, or are they already trained?
Colonel, why don't you come up and join me? That'll make things a lot faster. I won't have to shake my head and have everyone try to guess what I'm doing.
Thank you. I'm Audie Holloway, Director of the Alaska State Troopers. And the answer to your question is that we would be able to do a lot of that with the funds that we already have, because most of our troopers are pretty good with the computers that they have. And what we want to do is just be able to move computers to the cars to make us more efficient, so they can do reports, faster, and so that it can be turned from a paper system into a digital system, so we can share information better. And that training is can be done with funds that we already have, and we already have a lot of it. So,
and the $480,000 would cover all existing trooper vehicles?
No, this is just the that would get a lot of them, as many as we can do with what we, I mean, with the number that we have, it would get most of those. So I guess the answer more correctly is, I don't know exactly if it would get them all, but it would get a lot of them.
Would it be more than 80%? And what areas of the state would this these computers be installed in?
Well, they'd go through all the out throughout the state. It's just there won't be a system that's completely connected. It won't be a radio transmitted type system. The trooper will have to upload and download at the end of his shift every day to the main computer system, which is something that we'll be talking about a little bit later.
Sure. Senator Olson.
So the trooper out there, Demonic, is going to go ahead and have one of these data computers in his vehicle out there as well?
Yes.
He will?
Yeah. He in fact, it won't have to stay in his vehicle. He can take it with him. That's the beauty of it. But if he is using it in his vehicle, this computer, what it does is it organizes his whole car. He can run the video camera from it, run the radar from it, and also look up information and do his reports on it. And it'll take the place of the computer back at the office.
Mr. Chairman, one more question.
Senator Olson.
Are there any other law enforcement agency or out there that are using this type of system?
Yes, almost all other law enforcement agencies are doing and already have gone to this type of system.
With good success?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Don't go.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the next item on the list is a fire training engine for Southeast Regional Fire Training Center, or Southeast Regional Training Center, for $350,000. Mr. Chairman, in FY06, we got funding for one of these for the Fairbanks Regional Fire Training Center. It is essential for firemen to be able to work on equipment that is new, and old fire engines are not equipped the way the new ones are, and when fire departments acquire new stuff, it is essential that they be fully trained on that. This project would allow us to get a new one and put it in the Southeast so that the regional training center here is equipped with this.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
So is this vehicle, this fire engine, is going to be used for fighting fires as well, or just for training?
It's going to be used for training.
Only.
That is my understanding. That's correct.
So there's a fire next door right across the street. They're going to leave it there for training.
Well, hopefully we'll have the Juneau firefighters well-trained, and they'll be there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, the next item on the list is crime lab equipment replacement for $100,000. And again, the crime lab that we've got is the one we're stuck with for right now. And it's got some older equipment in it. And in particular, we would like to replace a ballistics comparison microscope that is serial number 2. So it is 21 years old, and it does not meet the current standards for ballistic comparisons, and this would allow us to do that. You know, the equipment that we have in that lab has to be replaced on a regular basis. In the past, we have had to, on at least one occasion, use the master lease program in order to replace some equipment. Typically, what we do for equipment replacement in the crime lab is at year end, all the salesmen all know that government agencies that are using this kind of equipment are facing stuff, and so they give discounts if you buy it year end, and that's typically when we buy our equipment, because we actually get some pretty good discounts on equipment near the fiscal year end. Mr. Chairman, the next item on the list is for $500,000 for Alaska State Trooper communications equipment, and this is would allow us to buy some additional portable vehicle mounted and vessel mounted and aircraft mounted radios. They would be ALMR compatible. It would let us transition to this to ALMR where it's currently operational. This is a direction we have to go, and we need to get our communication equipment up to speed.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I assume, Mr. Spencer, this is phase one, because, I mean, as you go through and look at the equipment cost, $5,000 is the cheapest, up to $30,000, and you're requesting $500,000, and then you talk about all the vehicles and vessels and aircraft that you need to do. I mean, what do you expect the cost for the other phases to be? I notice you've got a total of $500,000 for this fiscal year, but what do you expect the total cost to be?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that will this be the end of it? No. Do we know the total cost? No. I frankly do not. And unless Colonel Holloway does. We can go back, and we may have folks that have a much better grasp. I'm sure we have folks that have a better grasp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Be happy to provide more information.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. Well, just to follow up on the previous question from the Senator from Juneau, there are some that are skeptical about ALMR in that it once upon a time resided in Department of Administration. It then went to DMVA, and it's now back in Department of Administration. It's kind of, you know, a system without a father or a mother. But to get to the point is the cost of what the program is going to run in the long term, and whether we're buying surrogate systems or we're buying final state systems, and to say we don't know what it's going to cost continues to bother me, because that's the theme that we hear. We don't know what it's going to cost, but yet we're starting to finance it at a pretty sizable sum. Am I nervous about this wrongly?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Huggins, I understand your concerns, and you know, I think when ALMR first came to this committee probably 8 or 9 years ago, I believe I had the pleasure of sitting on this chair for the Department of Administration trying to predict what the cost would be. And I haven't, you know, Department of Administration has it now, as you point out, And I simply do not know. They're better equipped to tell you what the overall cost might be. The fact of the matter is, though, that as we integrate, we're not so much in the driver's seat as we're users of the system. And we do have a need to be able to communicate with all the other users of the system. But where does it end? I cannot tell you. I understand your concern. We, too, wonder how much will it cost.
Mr. Chairman, if I might follow
up.
As I understand it, you have, number one, the hardware cost, and then you have the user cost. Is that accurate? I mean, it's not just you buy a radio and you then can operate. There's a charge to be within the system that's recurring.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, Senator Huggins, there obviously, as you say, there are the hardware costs. You have to have the radio. Then there are the infrastructure costs, because this is a computer control radio switching operation, is my recollection. And if the Department of Administration thinks I'm being messing up on the technicalities, they are certainly welcome to come and join me. But it's computer controlled. As you know, several years ago, we bought a couple of controllers. Then there's the governance issues, because this is a system that will be operated by, federal agencies, by state agencies, and local agencies will have to tie into it. So there is all these concerns that have to be mitigated. And I know there has been discussion in the past about how do you govern this and how do the costs get addressed. And I do not know what the resolution on that has been. I know that the military initially was putting in a fair amount of federal money on some of the planning ends, but I'm not sure how much of their planning was oriented towards their use of it as opposed to the state of Alaska's use of it. So those are, I think, questions that DOA and perhaps DMVA would be better positioned to answer on the whole system.
Right.
I'm kind of out of seat.
Can I do one follow-up, Mr. Chairman, please?
Sure, go ahead.
Yep.
But I just briefly, before you do that, what number are you on so I can, because I was out for a minute, so I can catch up.
304.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
But go ahead, Senator Huggins.
Thank you very much. And my final question is, are there multiple vendors for the equipment, or are we essentially going to a sole source?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Huggins, I do not know the answer to that. Multiple
is more than one or two or five or.
Let's come up to the table.
That's good, Mr. Chairman. Thanks.
Okay, we'll go on to the next. You have a question, Senator Elton?
I do. And it may be that I'm not understanding the language, but it also says under the rationale, these funds would also support efforts to carry ALMR into areas where it is not currently available to troopers. I'm assuming that doesn't mean that you're going to be paying for some of the ground infrastructure, or does it mean that you'll be paying for some of the ground infrastructure?
Mr. Chairman, in ground infrastructure, you mean satellite receivers or?
I looked at this as equipment that allows you to use ALMR. But that one sentence kind of confuses me, and I'm not sure if it's an attempt to expand the area covered by ALMR or not.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Elton, I think we'd be better served in the committee if we get back to you on that answer. But I will say that that once everyone is using these radios, when you go respond to an area that doesn't have controller coverage, you still have to be able to communicate between your various handhelds. And so you still do have some of the communication issues in terms of just the technical ability to communicate. You know, you've all heard, I'm sure, discussions. I think the last time I heard a lengthy discussion on ALMR was talking about the communication difficulties in the Miller Reach fire years ago and how no one could talk to each other, and no one wants to get that. So you do have these kind of communication issues even outside the major grid.
And I may be inartful on this, Mr. Chair. None of these funds will be used for the transmitters that are going to be used by first responders. These funds will not be used to expand the geographical area in which ALMR is available.
I beyond the radios that the troopers and Department of Public Safety personnel carry, no, I do not.
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Next item, I think we're going to finish up these next four items, then we'll take a recess for half an hour. then we come back for public testimony. And we're still trying to fit in the university closeout. So we want to knock through these three items so we can have a little break. We're going to have a long evening here. So
certainly, Mr. Chairman. And I might add, Mr. Chairman, that we have, after this, I think it's another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 IT projects that we have not discussed yet. But we'll be happy to come back at the committee's leisure. Mr. Chairman, the next item on the list is facility engineering assessments, repair, and improvements. This is for $500,000. And Mr. Chairman, this sort of tags onto the one of the deferred, several of the deferred maintenance issues. In addition to deferred maintenance issues that we have right now in Soldotna and in Bethel and Fairbanks and at the Sitka Academy, we really need a comprehensive look at those facilities. And some of those facilities are old. Some of them have been put together piecemeal. We have to keep them running, you know, while we're having someone come in and look at them. But what we need is a long-range plan. What are we going to do? The last time we had someone come in and take a comprehensive look at all of the department facilities was, I believe, 15 years ago. The price tag of what back then would have been huge. But 15 years ago does not mean we can turn to those and say, well, this is what we need to do today. This is what we need to do tomorrow. And what we would like to be able to do is develop some kind of a systematic approach to these facilities. Instead of a piecemeal, it's broke, let's go fix it. We would like to get something that says, here's what we need to do to prevent it from being broke for the next 10 years or whatever that might be. And that's what this appropriation would allow us to do. The next item, Mr. Chairman, is the Fairbanks Regional Fire Training Center burn building. This is for $395,000. This would complement some funding that was received several years ago, but what we've got a regional fire training center there, and what we'd like to do is build a small two-story concrete and block live burn fire building where we can actually simulate, send folks in there during training and with an actual fire and have it be able to be cleaned up and be useful and realistic.
How many fire training stations, burn buildings do we have around the state?
Mr. Chairman, I think we have Dave Tyler, State Fire Marshal, online. Are you there, Dave?
Yes, I am.
If you could identify yourself for the record and then answer the question, please.
Yes, sir. My name is Dave Tyler. I'm the State Fire Marshal. We have one currently in Juneau that is in need of repair. There is nothing else in the state other than what's the military installations.
So we have one in Juneau that's state funded, and then this is a request for a second one in Fairbanks. Is that correct?
That's correct. This one would serve the northern region.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I might add that is an existing fire training center in Fairbanks right now, and we have, in fact, partnered, I believe, with the city of Fairbanks on some of the improvements to that.
Okay. Next item, please.
Mr. Chairman, the next item is Marine Fisheries Patrol Improvements. This is federal receipts of $200,000 or $2 million. This is an appropriation that we've requested for several years, Mr. Chairman. It's a little bit of an anomaly. There's been some discussions with your staff and legislative finance about whether this more properly belongs in the operating budget versus capital budget. The reason we've included it in the capital budget over the years is, number one, some of this funding will cross state fiscal years. It's a federal project, federally funded project. Number two is we have on a regular basis used it for what everyone would think of as capital projects, for including.
Let's go to our next.
Okay. Next one. And the last one on this list, Mr. Chairman, rural law enforcement training and equipment. This is again federal funds, $1 million. This trains rural law enforcement, including village police officers and tribal police officers, and gets them in and gets them some professional level training.
Do we have any closing questions for the department? I think what we'll do is tomorrow we'll be working on the capital budget some more. Maybe you could stop by and then we'll give you the opportunity to go through your IT projects.
Happy to do that, Mr. Chair.
We're going to have kind of a late night. We're going to go ahead and recess here for a little bit. And I think the time for public testimony to start at 5 o'clock, and we may do the university closeout. I got to check on the status of that, so we are at ease.